Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's Dot Foil Computer Services. And you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. All of today and tomorrow, we're going to be speaking to candidates for election in the municipal elections for mayor and city council here in Santa Fe. I'm happy now to welcome Mayor David Koss, who is running for re-election. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Good to be with you again.
It's great to be with you. So let's talk about a number of things that you have been discussing in your campaign. One of them is the job creation program.
Sure.
4,000 jobs, 4 years, is
in
that right?
4 years, yeah.
A lot of jobs. Yeah. How do you do it?
Well, it's going to take all of us to do that. But as we were in the campaign, and just at the city as well, you know, we've just trying to work our way out of what's been a great recession, really. And the city lost 4,000 jobs in the last 2 years. And so we thought it was not unreasonable to set a goal to get those jobs back.
But were those in the private sector mostly, or what was the proportion?
Those were mostly in the private sector. State and city government have lost jobs as well, and county government. But you know, one area that was really hard hit has been construction jobs. Another area that's been in hospitality. But being mayor the last 4 years and being on the city council now for 8 years, I know that this community has the capability to get these jobs back and to really move into a more sustainable type of economy. Looking at the Santa Fe's, the Angelou plan, and what we've been working on, that we can create jobs in art and culture, and we've done that with the rescuing of the College of Santa Fe. You know, we created almost 100 jobs there in something that would have gone bankrupt, and those are private sector jobs.
Now, when you talk about creating new jobs, there are jobs lost in construction. Do you talk about specifically creating more construction jobs, or jobs maybe in something else that's more needed? How do you think about that?
Well, we're looking at some of the major segments of our economy, and I think if you look at affordable housing as one area where we know that Santa Fe, there's still a great demand in this community for affordable housing. So if we could leverage some city monies, and the example I always use is if a young woman wants to buy a house, her first home in Santa Fe, if the city, the state, the county could help her with the down payment assistance, maybe $20,000, then she could borrow $180,000 or $200,000. It would make it affordable for her. And then that leverages $180,000 of investment into the community. And when she gets that house built in Tierra Contenta, Rancho Viejo, one of the developments in town, that puts people to work.
Now, there's an irony because there's so many houses on the market right now.
There are a lot of houses, but there are not a lot of affordable houses. The interesting thing is we probably won't need another million-dollar spec home in Santa Fe for 6 to 8 years, but there is still a waiting list for affordable housing. So if we, the city, the county, the state, working together, often with the employers, there's a program in town that I think over 100 employers have joined where they help their employee with that down payment assistance. So if we do that, then we can start to meet that demand for affordable housing.
Divide that million-dollar house up into four one-family houses, one-family homes.
Well, I saw that on Dr. Zhivago about 40 years ago, But I think the key for us is if we can spark that home building again, you know, take up the rest of the slack, you know, any homes that are currently affordable that are on the market. But I know from talking to the people that work at HomeWise and the people that work at the Santa Fe Community Housing Trust, there are long waiting lists for people to get affordable housing. So with a little help from the government and from their employer, we can make housing attainable for them and spark job creation. And so I think affordable housing is a good place to work. And as we get rolling in that, we think we can get more than 1,000 jobs started again. And this is one of those programs that really helps you, because one of an economic drag on Santa Fe is that so many people that earn wages here don't spend them here. They spend them in Albuquerque or Rio Rancho. And so by having more of the people that work here live here, we continue to improve our economy.
Because of having a tax base in town.
Because of having the tax base, because of having the spending here with local stores and local merchants, that multiplier effect starts to work in our favor. It's a $10 or $20 million drain on us every year to have those salaries being spent elsewhere. Another area very, very promising for Santa Fe, where we're just ready to move, is in green energy and sustainability. You know, we created a green collar jobs program and put young people to work with the Santa Fe area home builders through the community college, learning to do solar hot water systems, learning to do energy efficiency retrofits from homes. If we can start to ramp that up through the county is about to create an energy district where people can invest in energy efficiency and alternative energy for their homes and then pay those low interest loans back through their property tax bill through the county. So when that district's in place and the county's just about to create it, there'll be this great demand for alternative energy, for green collar jobs. So we have a green collar job training program at the community college. The city and the college have already created a green collar job training program. With that new demand that could come out of that district, again, we think we can create jobs at the same time making Santa Fe's carbon footprint less, making people's homes more affordable because they can have lower energy bills.
So and Lord knows we have a lot of underutilized sunlight.
Sure. There's so many parts of it, the energy piece. I was at a conference sponsored by the Santa Fe Alliance and the Farmers Market talking about farm to restaurant. If we can help local growers and local food producers network with the restaurants in town, with the public schools, with Ski Santa Fe, with some of the bigger institutions, again, we make our food supply more local, more secure, but we also create jobs in the restaurants and on the farms and in the food producing, like cheese making or wine making, etc. And again, we're creating jobs while we're making ourselves more sustainable and more food secure. Another one is in media and film industry, and it ties back to rescuing the College of Santa Fe. They're closing a deal for a $60 million film at Garson Studios, which would not have been possible if the college had gone bankrupt and was just sitting there dark right now. But a $60 million investment in Santa Fe and in the film is hundreds of jobs through Garson Studios. Another movie, Thor, is coming to town, $200 million film. So if we can get our people trained, and again, the community college has this program, the College of Santa Fe has this program, again, we're bringing jobs to Santa Fe and we're getting local people, especially local young people, involved in these jobs.
Now, there's another area I want to talk to because we're going to run out of time, and that is crime in general and gangs in specific. One of the things that's so terrifying about gangs is that there are parents who are in gangs, their children are in elementary school who are children of people in gangs. There's a whole generational aspect to this. They're getting them really young. What is to be done?
Well, I think we need to work with those families and with our young people even more. I think the fact that we have a high dropout rate in Santa Fe, we have to stop treating that as that's a school problem. That's a community problem. And some of the programs that I've really been proud of in the city is one in particular is YouthWorks. And we get young people who have dropped out of school. Some of them have already been in gangs, have already been in trouble with the law. But we get them working and making wages, and the people that put these programs together just have a way of saying, you know, there's dignity, there's self-respect that comes from having a job that's benefiting the community. And so I think we need to really increase those efforts. We're in a sad situation where we've arrested young people for home burglary. They get released to the custody of their parents, and then we arrest them again, sometimes the very next day, once with an ankle bracelet on. And so I've met with Judge Michael V. Hill, the new district, the new judge that just took over juvenile court. Met with the district attorney. Met with the county on the operation of the juvenile detention facility. And we have to get tougher. You know, if we release you to your parents and then you get arrested again, that's not working. So if your parents can't manage you, then the community's going to have to. There may be some days at the juvenile detention center with that, but I think what's even more important is the training, the work, and the counseling to try to get our young people that are going the wrong direction, give them a timeout, and then get them started in the right direction again.
It's tricky because you can make a lot more money selling drugs than weatherizing houses or whatever these training programs are about.
It's true. It's true, but you seldom get put in jail for weatherizing homes, but you will get arrested for selling drugs, and it's a thing that the whole community, not just the schools, has to address. It's just as an aside, that's why I'm such a strong supporter of the living wage.
Right.
We can't get the message out that work is not valuable. Work is valuable.
Now, as you've discussed, in an economic downturn, that affects the city. So not only are private sector jobs lost, but city budgets go down. How do you decide what services to cut, or how do you decide how to deal with budget shortfalls?
Well, we've, you know, it's a set of priorities. It's efficiencies. We've been dealing with a budget downturn for 2 years now. We've adjusted $13 million of spending. We're well on our way to adjusting another $4 or $5 million of spending. The council has made a couple of things a priority. One has been public safety, police and fire protection. Another one has been youth services. The city pays for the majority of the after-school programs in the city, and I don't think you can overstate the importance of that. So you see that.
For reasons that we've just been talking about.
But you've seen us cut back a little bit on, for example, the Santa Fe Ride program. It used to run till midnight. Now it ends at 10 o'clock when the buses stop running. You'll see the recreation center's not open as much. You'll see some of those trims being made in hours of operation. We've adjusted to a lot of this. Also, with increasing the efficiency, we're asking city workers, again, to do more with less so that we keep some of those basic services just going, because what we can't back off on really is public safety, our youth services, and then just the vital, vital things like on a snowy day like today, making sure that the crews are out there
right. Plowing
the streets.
Now, Santa Fe has been for a long time, partly due to work that you've done, an immigrant-friendly city in the sense that, for example, city police officers do not do immigration enforcement, things like that. How's
that
going? What kind of issues are coming up, if any, around immigration?
You know, I think that those policies, which are more than 10 years old now, certainly didn't begin with me. Our police have an excellent working relationship with the immigrant community. They also have an excellent working relationship with the federal agents, and you know, we do not tolerate criminals, regardless of national origin. But we don't profile people based on where we think they might be from or what we think their immigration status may be. And I think these policies have helped increase public safety in the community, because if an immigrant woman is sexually assaulted or the victim of domestic violence, she's not afraid to call the police, or she's not as afraid. I don't want to say the fear is gone. Our city has endorsed immigration reform and is working with Congressman Ben Ray Lujan on that issue, supporting that issue. And I think all in all, I'm just very, very proud that this city has built its reputation in large part on being tolerant of people coming here, and we've demonstrated that with the immigrant community as well.
So we've got just a little less than a minute left. It's all yours.
Well, Mary Charlotte, I just would say hi to the listeners on KSFR. Public radio is really important. You do a great job. the whole news program just helps educate this community. And you're always, you know, if we know how to do green collar jobs, a lot of it is because of what KSFR has put out through their shows. So again, I just would say hello to everybody and keep up the good work.
Mayor Koss is running for re-election, and the election day is on March 2nd. Early voting runs through the 26th of February. For more information on elections and voting, you can go to santafenm.gov. Once again, Mayor Koss, thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm very happy now to welcome Azeneth Kepler. She is running for mayor of the city of Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
So, as we just talked about with David Koss, a lot of jobs have been lost in Santa Fe over the last few years. What do you do to create jobs, to create new jobs?
Well, we differ in terms of how we're going to fund and jumpstart the jobs program here. The mayor has suggested that we can unroll and support 4,000 jobs in the next 4 years based largely on funding from taxpayer dollars. I believe that at this point in our history that is unrealistic, and that we must go directly to the public sector, the private sector as the first step, and then look to some public funding in an auxiliary or supplementary basis.
So how do you go to the private sector?
We have a plan to go out and vigorously recruit new businesses to the city of Santa Fe. I mean, we really want to continue to support our existing businesses and strengthen them as well as we can. However, it's important to diversify our economic base, and we think that by going out across the nation and maybe even to Europe, we can look and see what entities, what industries might be interested in coming here, so long as they are environmentally compatible with the city of Santa Fe, and also have an interest in sort of melding into our cultural base and hiring local people.
Specifically, what kinds of businesses or outside groups would you think about attracting?
Technology is one. We understand there are many businesses now in California that, you know, California's economy is very, very shaky right now as a state. And
that's because we've taken over all their film business.
Well, we might want to bring their tech business here, too. But there are businesses, small businesses, that we understand would be happy to relocate to an economically friendlier environment. And we will work closely with the state economic development people and the city economic development people to craft incentives to bring them here. And one of the points I wanted to make is that when I was serving as city manager, we had an economic development department that was at the top of the chart in terms of priority and, I should say, in terms of vision for the city, because we really had committed to strengthening our middle class through job creation and through working with the schools to provide appropriate curriculum for those entering the job market. Unfortunately, after my time was up at the city, that department was dismantled and put as a division under the Affordable Housing Department, and it has, in my opinion, languished there ever since. So what our administration would bring to the office is a renewed emphasis on economic development with a driver through the private sector, which is what we intended to do even when the recession was not the specter that it is now.
What kind of incentives do you have to offer private companies, private industries from other states, from other places, for them to want to relocate here or to locate here?
As I understand it, and I've been talking to technical staff, there are some tax benefits that we can give young companies or new companies. There are also some practical assistance that we can provide. to make their location and set up here easier. There are some pieces of property that we've had in industrial parks that we need to revisit to see if providing a location and a good facility at a reasonable or reduced rate to begin with would be appropriate, understanding that the quid pro quo would be that, these entities would be hiring local people and helping us to jumpstart our job market here.
It's also tricky to have that match between the industries you're bringing in and the workforce we have here. So if you lose jobs in construction, they may or may not fit into, for example, a high-tech company.
That's right. But if you'll remember, at one point we had an Intel training program that was very successful. And my recollection is that there was one either here at this community college or down in Albuquerque, and it's been quite a while. But the company actually helped create the curriculum and told us what they were looking for in terms of workforce. And so we worked hand in glove with the company and the educational institutions to provide the proper training and certification processes so that there would be confidence in the businesses that the workforce they were hiring would be prepared. And we're going to have to continue to do that. It's not going to happen overnight, but the fact is that if we want long-term sustainable economic development here and growth in the job market here, we cannot be dependent on taxpayer dollars to fund that. And my opponent's plan, the incumbent, it has a price tag of about $80,000 a job with it, most of which, as I read the plan, is going to be funded either with city money, federal stimulus money, or money from neighboring entities that, would partner with us. But we're all hurting so badly in terms of tax base. That frightens me to depend on the public sector that way. I think we really have to go back and do it the old-fashioned way and hopefully strengthen these private businesses when they come here so that they can make it for the long haul and make sure we get a long-term commitment from them and a clawback clause is what they call it if they decide they want to pick up and leave early.
Why do we have trouble with the tax base? Isn't this one of the wealthiest cities anywhere?
It is, but you know, our gross receipts tax revenue is way, way, way down. And it's been off for a while. We're running a deficit at the city. If you talk to the chief financial officer, the last report that he made to the finance committee, I believe it was that it was an estimated $4 million deficit that was going to have to be corrected by the end of the fiscal year, which ends on June 30th. And one of my campaign managers, Ed Brown, called and spoke to Mr. Milliken, the finance officer, and he said it could be as much as $10 million by the end of the fiscal year. It's a moving target, and we just don't know.
Let's talk about crime. There's a general problem with certain kinds of crime, although it's not maybe one of the highest crime rate cities on the planet, but we have this particular problem with gangs, with parents of school students being in gangs, young children being recruited into gangs, mm-hmm. house burglaries that have hit, you know, my own family, neighborhood, right. and so on. What do you do?
You got to hit it from the top and you got to hit it from the bottom. And our approach is very simple. The first part of it is that we are insufficiently staffed at the police department. We do not have enough police on the street. And this is important regardless of who's committing the crimes. We're fourth in the nation per capita for residential and commercial burglaries combined. That's a shameful statistic for us right now. But 3 years ago when I was city manager, I predicted, and it was on the record, that we were going to be in for a very difficult time if we didn't start staffing up right away. Now, I know that they had some problems of filling some empty positions. They've only created another four positions over there for sworn officers since I left. We need, looking at the similar cities in the West that are low density and spread out, we need another 40 to 45 officers just to be able to handle what we have. And our campaign is pushing to go back to community policing, which is well accepted and endorsed by many law enforcement officials around the country and has a lot of supporters here.
And that's it was tried here, and at that time it didn't really work out very well.
That was a leadership issue. and I think a buy-in issue by the community. It fizzled on the vine and it died. And I, you know, I've spoken with former Mayor Jaramillo about this. You know, we had a police officer that was not accepted by the force. There were some leadership issues. Our plan is to have a top brass that is well respected by the force and is well studied in community policing and will embrace the plan that our campaign is trying to set out, which is a combination of uniformed officers on the street, both in cars and in on foot and on bicycles, substations strategically placed throughout the city, and that is a good place for officers to do paperwork. It's not a dispatch center. It's a good resting place, and it's a good police presence place in the communities. And finally, to have houses available, workforce housing for the police officers integrated into the community, and we believe we can buy up some existing houses that are in foreclosure to do that.
That leads into the subject in general of affordable housing.
Yes.
How do you deal with that?
Well, we've written a white paper, which is a concept paper, and it's posted on our website, which is Kepler, the numeral 4, mayor, all one word, .com. It is about 14 pages, and what it does is it challenges the existing neighborhoods to shoulder the burden of affordable housing, not just the developers, because my sense is that developers have been resistant in large measure when they have challenging terrain in which to build developments. It makes it very difficult to do that 30%. Downtown infill projects, same thing, difficult to do that 30%. And we have an opportunity to really re-energize our neighborhoods and bring them back to the model that they were years ago, which was every socioeconomic group lived in just about every neighborhood. And so it's our hope that we could buy up some existing housing through foreclosure, renovate it for green efficiency, bring our young people in to learn the trade of upgrade and renovation, and apprentice them in that regard, working with the schools, and then do some select infill projects in these neighborhoods, but having it be neighborhood and citizen-driven rather than city-driven. It wouldn't be top-down driven, it would be bottom-up driven, and an example of how this works is Elder Grace. It's a great community that's under construction now here. That was a collaborative effort.
Right, right. So just to clarify, I live in a neighborhood on the west side. How would I participate in affordable housing in my neighborhood?
We would challenge the neighborhood association to get a focus group together to work with private designers and city staff, and really have city staff take a backseat role and have the private urban designers or architects take a role in talking to the neighborhood residents and helping them to identify how they would like to help solve this problem. And along the way, what we're encouraging these neighborhoods to do is identify areas that would be ripe for some select infill, to establish small community centers where kids could go after school and it would be staffed by volunteers, perhaps set out a community garden. I mean, the sky's really the limit. The hope is that you'll get a combination of all kinds of housing, including quality rentals, by doing that. Because if you have a little higher density, you avoid urban sprawl, but you also can build in some smaller, more affordable units for those who are either just coming into the workforce or who are retiring.
We're talking to Azeenith Kepler. We've got about 2 minutes left. I wanted to ask you about what happens when a city budget goes down. Where do you make the cuts?
That is the very sensitive issue, but it is something that I know how to do. I managed that budget for close to a year. I have recently received, I'll start with one very good way to do it. I received recently all the contracts under $30,000 and all the contracts over $30,000 that were issued and paid for during a 12-month period. We have more than $3.1 million in contracts under $30,000, some of which go for, I will not say frivolous, but I will say unnecessary services during a recession.
What's an example of that?
Developing a competition program for the Affordable Housing Department. you know, we may not be able to pay somebody outside of City Hall to do that. We may not be able to pay somebody to review, a third-party provider to review whether or not we're operating at maximum efficiency in another department. And those are the other types of contracts that I see. I mean, we're going to have to train ourselves to do a lot of the work that we've been farming out. And the $30,000 apiece contracts are the ones that go under the radar. They're not in front of council for approval. And they add up. As I pointed out, I added them up on my adding machine with the tape, and it exceeded $3 million for 1 year. And that was just the under $30,000 contracts. I'm still adding up the other ones, but I know it could be as high as $10 million or more. And I'll be letting the public know when I finish that ad.
Well, we're just about out of time. Azeneth Kepler is running for mayor. Your website is?
Kepler for Mayor. That's the numeral 4, keplerformayor.com.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back. I'm happy now to welcome Russell Simon. He is running for City Council in District 1. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
So why did you choose to run?
You know, I love Santa Fe. I was born here, and I want the best for it. More specifically, you know, I'm a young candidate. I'm 28 years old, born here. I've been here as a student. I've worked here as a journalist. I've been in business in Santa Fe. And I think it is extremely tough for young people in this town.
It is indeed.
It's tough for young people to feel like they can raise a family and not have just a good paying job, but a good job. And really feel like they can achieve the things they set out in life to achieve here. That's part of why I'm running, is to make this a better city for young people.
How would you do that?
You know, one of the parts of my platform is what I call entrepreneurial mentorship. And what I see in Santa Fe is, you know, a lot of young people. And I graduated from the St. John's Graduate Institute. And just as an example, the people I graduated with were smart, talented, creative. They were baristas, crew members at Trader Joe's. You know, waitresses. And these are the people I wish would stay here. But, you know, within a year of graduating, they're off and they're doing the next thing. Those aren't the sort of jobs that are going to keep them here. And I think the same is true of people about to finish undergrad or high school, a whole age range. And I think these people, they need more support. And who you have in Santa Fe is this other group of people, which are often from somewhere else after having had a really fruitful career, really successful career. They've got a lot of connections. They have a lot of experience. And, you know, they buy second homes here and they move here permanently or part-time. Well, that group of people has something to teach our young people. They have something to provide. They've got the connections and money for business plans and all the rest of it. So I see an entrepreneurial mentorship program. It's sort of a combination of SCORE and Big Brothers Big Sisters.
So you're basically teaching people to start new businesses.
Yeah, I want any young person in Santa Fe who thinks they might want to start a business or thinks they might be able to succeed here to have the mentorship and the guidance and the support they need. And you know, personally, I have a lot of friends who have been in that position and have lacked that support.
Now, what kind of entrepreneurial new businesses can you envision young people who just graduated from St. John's or whatever actually doing?
You know, I think about that question a lot, and I think any industry that needs innovative and creative people should be fostered in Santa Fe and should be considering Santa Fe as a place to set up business. You know, any consulting group, any, you know, international NGO, you know, we have businesses like Thornburg that have been successful here when the rest of their industry is in Wall Street or somewhere else. And, you know, young people understand more than anyone that in a global economy, you don't have to be in Silicon Valley to start the next successful computer business. You can be right here in Santa Fe. And I think that, you know, Santa Fe is one of the most innovative and talented cities in the entire country. And we should be living up to that. And I don't think that our city council has put the attention and the focus on making this a city that nurtures entrepreneurship that it should have.
Another part of your platform is a community-owned energy utility.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, I have a really strong environmental background. I spent a year developing renewable energy and reforestation projects internationally for a nonprofit in D.C. I was director of communications for Repower New Mexico. What I have seen at the federal level is, of course, a lack of action. And what I have seen in talking to people in the environmental community here is that ownership over energy production is the thing that is going to allow us to transfer to renewable energy. And if you look at the rest of the country, there are 2,000 cities with one of these. On average, they pay 14% less in electricity. On average, they have more renewable energy. They're more responsive to the communities they serve. And right now, frankly, you know, our energy future is in the hands of investors on Wall Street. It's in the hands of an investor-owned utility who has made their intention to monopolize renewable energy production in this state well known. And Santa Fe cares about this issue deeply. We're progressive. We're environmentalists. This is what we need to do, I think, in order to take control of the energy future.
Monopolizing renewable energy seems like almost an oxymoron, considering that the greatest source of renewable energy is the sun, which falls on everybody's roof.
Mm-hmm. But in New Mexico, what we have is a regulated monopoly for our utility. And if you want to build, for example, a wind farm and sell it to the city of Santa Fe, you can't right now. You have to go through PNM. And what PNM has said is that they want to own this distributed renewable energy. They don't want, you know, other businesses owning it. I'll give you an example in the city of Austin, Texas, which has a community-owned energy utility. 6 years ago, they had 4 solar energy companies. Today, they have 24. Why? It's because those companies are now able to sell electricity to the city. And if we did this, this would be a huge business development opportunity. People, you know, entrepreneurs will start businesses in order to fill that demand.
Another part of your platform is to have at-large city councilors.
Sure. You know, when I was a reporter watching City Hall in the county for almost 3 years, I saw just an enormous amount of division. And, you know, I'm someone who, as a journalist and someone with a communications background, believes in the power of communication and persuasion. But I also think something deeper is wrong on our city council. And I think that there is a divisiveness that has just grown in recent years. North-South, you know, white, Hispanic, outsider, native, developer, neighborhood, that is really not going to be solved through, you know, sheer force of will, someone just coming in and making everyone get along. I think if you took half the city council, 4, and made them at large, which means elected by the whole city, representing the whole city, then you would have at least half the governing body plus the mayor with the interests of the entire city at heart. And that is a deep structural change that I'm going to start pushing once I'm elected that I think will help Santa Fe move past the usual divisions that we've seen.
So you'd have 4 representing districts and 4 at large.
Sure. Each district would still have their elected representative, but then the other half would be at large representing the whole city.
We're talking to Russell Simon, who is running for city council in District 1. We've got another minute or so. What do you want to tell the people?
You know, that this is going to be a close election. And I, for one, think that we need change at City Hall. I'm unsatisfied with the status quo. I want Santa Fe to really reach its potential. I want to see its potential as one of the most talented and creative cities fulfilled. And I also want to see more young people on the council, and that's hopefully what I'll bring.
Russell Simon, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks very much.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned. I'm happy now to welcome Chris Calvert. He is running for re-election in District 1 for Santa Fe City Council. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, and thank you to all our listeners today.
So, you are running for re-election. Why are you running for re-election? How's it been going these last 4 years that you've been a city councilor?
Well, one of the main reasons I'm running for re-election is for the same reason I ran 4 years ago, to create a more sustainable community here in Santa Fe. I think we've laid the foundation in a lot of respects for progress in that area, and I want to continue that work and make sure that it, you know, gets established and continues on. And also, I think right now, you know, we find ourselves in difficult economic times, and I think we need, you know, proven and experienced leadership to lead us out and make Santa Fe even better than it ever has been before.
What do you mean by sustainability?
Well, what I mean by sustainability, and, you know, a lot of times people think, you know, in terms of green or the environment, and that's certainly a part of it. Water is our most precious resource, I think, natural resource in this area. We also, you know, are doing a lot of things with energy and reducing greenhouse gases. But sustainability also has to do with the economy and what those things that are unique to Santa Fe that give it its identity, its cultural heritage, its historic resources, all of those things. I think we need to make sure that whatever we do, we take into account those things that are unique and precious to us, and that we sustain those as we move forward. For example, in terms of economic growth, I think we have to make sure that those policies that we put in place to grow the economy take into account our limitation of our water resources and how precious they are, and so that we use them judiciously and in a way that we can sustain well into the future.
You know, with water resources, one of the things that has always puzzled me is when you look at water use anywhere, desert lands and other lands, 90% of water use goes toward agriculture in one way or another, growing food. 10% goes toward residential, and then everyone's always telling you to turn off your faucet. It's not, how big of a difference does residential even make?
Well, that's overall, that would be sort of what you're describing as sort of statewide and how water's used, but how it's used within the city is a lot more, you know, residential plus commercial accounts for most of the water use. So residences within the city can make a lot of difference on how, you know, well they can serve and how judicious they are in the use of their water. We don't want to impinge upon, you know, certain sustainable agricultural purposes, but so we don't want to take their water, especially places like Acequias. We don't want to, you know, buy up those water rights for the city uses. But I will say that within the city, residential can constitute a considerable amount of our water use, and so we do need to focus on that.
We're talking to Chris Calvert. So what are some of the accomplishments that you are happy about, and where do you think the city needs to go?
Wow, there's a big question. In 25 words or less. No, seriously, I think I'm proud of the fact that I've worked a lot on our sustainability issues, like energy conservation and reducing our greenhouse gas emissions.
Have we really done that? Have we reduced our greenhouse gas emissions?
We are in progress of doing that. I can't say that we have actually done that. We have put in place things that I think will do that. We have a new green building code. We have developed a sustainability plan, which is sort of our blueprint for the community. We've made sure that a lot of city facilities are getting retrofitted to reduce their energy consumption and thus their greenhouse gas emissions. So I think we, like I said, we've laid the groundwork and for a lot of these things and institutionalized them so that we don't have to deal with them on a case-by-case basis. They become part of the norm of what we do in the city. I've chaired the Water Conservation Committee for the last 4 years. Water consumption overall in Santa Fe is the lowest it's been in many years, despite some growth, and on an individual, on a per capita basis, it's the lowest. It's probably one of the lowest in of any of the western states or any of the cities in the western states. So I think we've made a lot of progress.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think we've had a lot of good and innovative conservation programs.
Like the low-flow toilets and stuff?
That, and plus we, you know, programs that we work on to incentivize people to swap out their inefficient washing machines. But, you know, and we have concentrated a lot on the residential. We're moving into, you know, sort of exploring new ground and incentivizing the commercial sector. And outdoors, we really want to get into making our irrigation, you know, our watering of our lawns or whatever plants at home, you know, more efficient. So I think we're continuing to explore and also provide new programs to get people to conserve more. I think we do it through education as well, a lot of programs to get. And so I think all those things have worked.
On a different subject, let's talk about public safety. We talked with the mayoral candidates about crime and gangs and things along those lines. What is your position? What can Santa Fe do to really eliminate gangs?
To eliminate gangs? Well, I think there's a lot of things we can do, and I think it'll take all the different players within the community working together to accomplish those. The city has, has programs for crime prevention and neighborhood watch. But I think, a lot of it depends on the economy. I know in economic times, there's a lot less crime and gang activity. I think it depends upon the quality of our education and those programs in the community and how much we engage. And I think it has to do with economic opportunities that people see at the sort of the light at the end of the tunnel as part of why they should stay in school and continue their education, so that there is a goal and something that they can do later on, and so they don't drop out and go into less productive and less beneficial activities.
We've got maybe a minute left. Let's talk about the economy. Any ideas?
Sure. I mean, I think some of the things we're doing in terms of sustainability in the environment, energy conservation, alternative energy, green jobs economy, all those I think are a way to diversify our economy and make it stronger. I think we have opportunities at the College of Santa Fe. I think we have opportunities out at the airport, not just with commercial aviation, but also with a business park out there. I think actually affordable housing is an economic opportunity that we need to explore and work on together in this community for the betterment of the community and again for the betterment of the economy.
Chris Calvert, you've got another 20 seconds. It's all yours.
Well, I just want to thank you for this opportunity. I would like to thank the listeners, ask them to go out, vote March 2nd. I would ask them to consider me and vote for me on March 2nd. They can vote early, starting Wednesday the 10th, or they can do absentee voting already.
Chris Calvert is running for City Council in District 1, where he is the current City Councilor. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And once again, Municipal Election Day is Tuesday, March 2nd. Polls are open from 7 in the morning until 7 in the evening. Early voting runs through the 26th of February, and we will be talking to more candidates tomorrow. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, the Jazz Experience, broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company. My name is Mary Charlotte. We'll see you tomorrow with more Talk with the Candidates. Hasta la vista. Ciao.